Strategy I've traded for just about 10 years now. It's actually been a strategy that people have been using for decades. There's really no secret about the fact that stocks with rapid earnings growth each year tend to be the big winners year in and year out. The three things I really look for with this strategy are companies that are growing earnings very rapidly. They're also outperforming the overall market. And I buy them only when they break out of sound basing patterns. As I said, this sort of strategy is nothing new. It's been around for decades and decades. My grandfather traded this strategy beginning in 1911. Of course, he didn't use charts or some of the things we use today, but the basic principles of what he used, which is basically buying high-growth companies in cutting-edge industries with exploding growth, and buying those stocks as they hit new highs in price, is one, as I said, it's been used for decades. In 1962, William Giler wrote a book called How Charts Can Help You in the Stock Market. 63, Nicholas Darvis wrote a book called How I Made $2 Million in the Stock Market, which is a great book. It's amazing how these people back in the early 60s used the same types of charts that you see month in and month out among whatever cycle we're in, the current leaders of that cycle. Of course, Bill O'Neill put this sort of strategy on the map in front of the world when he came out with his book in 1988 called How to Make Money in Stocks. I'm fortunate enough to be in contact with a number of very successful traders, and these people not only trade the intermediate term trend, but also they're day traders and swing traders. The very first three questions I always ask of these people are, how do you get into a position, how do you get out, and what money management principles do you use? I don't really care what software they use. I don't care what brokerage account they use. I don't really care if they use direct ECN access or not. So I'm going to move into our discussion today of how I trade the intermediate term trend, and I'm basically going to look at those three items: my buy criteria, my sell criteria, what I look at in terms of money management, and I'm also going to go over a little bit of how I look at the general market. When I look at buying stocks, I'm really looking at three criteria. Years ago, I started looking at a number of criteria, and over time, I kind of whittled that number down to these three. The first is earnings growth. Some of us know in the real estate market that there are three primary factors that influence the relative value of one property versus another. The first factor is location, the second factor is location, and the third factor is location. In the stock market, it's pretty much the same thing. We're talking about three things: earnings, earnings, and earnings. So the very first thing I look at is I want to see a company show 30% or more earnings growth in the next two fiscal years. Some people look at past earnings growth. I personally prefer to look at the next 1 to 2 fiscal years estimates that Wall Street analysts are expecting the company to earn. The market's a discounting mechanism. It doesn't really care what happened yesterday or today. It's really just interested in what's going to happen in the next 6 to 9 to 12 months. That's why I focus on what Wall Street expects the firm to earn the next 1 to 2 fiscal years. Now, my minimum criteria on this is 30%, but I'm really looking for 40% or more, and the more the better. 50%, 70%, 90%, 100% or more are really the types of stocks that turn out to be the big winners year in and year out. The second thing I look at is I want to see that the stock has been outperforming the market over the past 8 weeks at least. Now, when I'm, you know, most of the stocks I look at are technology stocks. These stocks are in rapidly growing industries. The chief executive officers and senior managements of these companies, they don't even know themselves from 1 month or one quarter to the next what the next fiscal year's earnings are going to look like. These companies are in tremendously fast growth cycles. They can't really oftentimes pinpoint where their growth is going to be exactly. And if they can't, you can't really expect Wall Street to pinpoint it either. So I don't just look at that first criteria and say, oh, okay, a stock's supposed to grow 40% over the next 2 years, I'm going to go buy it. I have to see that the stock's been outperforming the S&P 500 index over the last 8 weeks at least. Now, sometimes I'll look at a stock when it's just been outperforming, say, 3 to 4 weeks. If everything else sets up, I am going to bend some of my rules here. The fact that the market likes the stock based on this high relative strength over the last 8 weeks tells me that there's something to the story, and it also corroborates what the analysts are estimating on the stock. The third thing I look at in terms of buy criteria is the chart pattern. The chart pattern to me is probably 75% of the whole game. Specifically, what I want to see is a stock emerge from a base building pattern of at least 6 to 8 weeks. A base is just a somewhat fancy term for some sort of sideways movement that the stock has made after it's either come up off in advance and maybe it's taking a break and it goes sideways for a while, or perhaps it's come way down off a decline like a lot of tech stocks have done recently. You want to see the stock come up close to where its prior high was, and I want to buy that stock as soon as it hits new high ground, as long as the volume confirms that a lot of people are interested at that breakout point. The breakout point then would be right where the top of the basing period is. So if we're looking at it at an 8-week base, and the top of the base is say $50 and the bottom of the base is $40, I want to buy that stock when it moves right into new high ground above 50. So I'll be buying the stock at 50 and an eighth or 50 and a quarter. On that breakout day, I want to see volume expand so that by the end of the day, volume is 50% greater than the 50-day average volume of the stock. The average daily volume is 500,000 shares. By the end of that day, I want to see that day's volume be at least 750,000 or more. Now, sometimes you're in the middle of a day, a stock's breaking out, say you're halfway through the day, you don't really know if the day is going to end up being with, you know, an over 50% increase over the average daily volume. So what I do is I just sort of interpolate, if the average daily volume is 500,000 shares in a stock and we're halfway through the day and it's already trading at 400,000, I simply double the 400,000 and I expect that by the end of the day it's going to be at 800,000. Which would be 60% above the average daily volume of 500,000. This is just sort of a rough benchmark that's the best you have to go on if you're in the middle of the day. Let me show you a few chart patterns here. I'm really going to show you two types of chart patterns today. They're the ones that I tend to trade the most. The first is, it goes by a lot of different names. Some people call it a saucer or a cup. Bill Giler in his 1962 book called it a saucer and platform. Bill O'Neill called it a cup and handle in his 1988 book. This is a stock, Insight Pharmaceutical. You notice up here in the upper left corner, you see the company was losing money. Now, if you only looked at stocks that were making money, you would have completely shied away from a lot of the big internet winners of 98 and 99. So when we get whole group moves in companies that are showing no earnings at all, I will deviate from my earnings criteria by looking at sequential revenue growth. That means I will compare, say, quarter two's growth in revenues only, since there are no earnings, versus quarter one's revenues. For example, in quarter one, if a company earned 50 or had revenues of 15 million, in quarter two, the revenues were 20 million. That's a 33% sequential increase in revenues. I'm not interested in comparing revenues from one quarter to the prior year's same quarter, because these companies are too young, they're growing too quickly. I really want to just see what happens from one quarter to the next. What I found is that in the 99 explosion, and even the 98 explosion, the companies that were leading the market showed sequential revenue growth of at least 25% from one quarter to the next. I mean, this is torrid growth. So some groups, for example, the biotechs, don't even have any revenues to speak of. There's no revenue growth. They're all in research and development phases. In that situation, I'm going to just look at the chart pattern. If a whole group is making that kind of move, if it's one stock here or there and it has no revenue growth or no earnings growth, I will ignore it, even though the chart looks great. But if it's part of a whole group, such as we saw the biotechs made a big run late last year. They were all forming similar patterns at exactly the same time. When you get that sort of whole group confirmation, I will ignore earnings and revenues and just trade off the chart. So in this case, we have Insight. You can see it lost money. However, a lot of these stocks were forming this big cup pattern here. You see the cup coming up, and then you see what we might call a platform or a handle right here. And in this particular pattern, the buy point again is 1/8 of a point or 1/4 of a point above the top of this little handle. Now, on the breakout day, as I said, you really want to see some powerful volume. This is a great example, which is why I used it, of the exact volume you want to see. This volume bar is way above the volume that occurred for months and months, for say 3 months or so before the breakout. There's no coincidence that this big volume came in just as the stock made a new high. A lot of people are looking at these chart patterns. Institutions are not dummies. They're looking at the same patterns. They've been looking at patterns like this for decades. This is the exact kind of volume you want to see on a breakout. If you see a breakout and you don't see this kind of volume, you should really be suspicious of whether it's going to have the necessary follow-through to bring it out into new highs and roll up a big gain. Okay, Dan. Here's what the stock did. Here's the buy point I just showed you a little while ago. Here's the relative strength line. This is an indicator I always look at. It's one of my three indicators I mentioned. It's kind of hard to see here, but it did have an upward slant to the relative strength line for at least, looks like, 4, 5, 6 weeks before the breakout. And as you can see, the stock made a 325% gain in 4 weeks from that point. Okay, the next example of the same sort of cup pattern is Nokia. You can see up here the growth over the next 2 years were expected to be 29% and 21%. Notice the PE was already 1.4 times the S&P. Most investors, I think, are scared to buy high PE stocks. I love high PE stocks. These are the stocks that have the most expectations built into the price. These are the stocks that, for some reason, everybody wants to own. Those are the stocks that make the biggest moves year after year. It's not the low PE stocks at all. Again, the relative strength line going up for 10 weeks or so, showing right before the breakout, showing you that people want this stock more than they want the average S&P 500 stock. And you can see on the breakout day, I've put a little arrow there to show you that there was heavy volume coming through the handle. Okay, and this shows what happened after the stock broke out. Now, I want to make something clear. These patterns do not always work. A lot of times they don't, particularly when you're in a skitzy market, excuse me, like we've been in this last year. When we're in a good market, these are the patterns, though, that do produce the big winners year in and year out. These patterns, they don't work all the time, but if you combine them with sound money management principles, i.e. cutting your loss if you're wrong. I have a pretty religious loss cutting policy whereby I'm out of a position if it drops 5 to 7% below my buy point. I don't care why the stock dropped. I don't care why I made a mistake. I raise my hand. I admit my mistake. I sell the position, and I don't even go on one of the news wires and find out if there was a bad earnings report or did an analyst downgrade the stock. It doesn't matter to me. It's meaningless. There are a lot of other opportunities out there. I never get wedded to a particular stock. Okay. Here's AOL. This is sort of a variation on that cut pattern. It looks sort of like a W. It's known as a double bottom pattern. Has the same basic formation, though, as a cup or a saucer. You can see up here, the reason I was attracted to the stock initially was 99 estimated earnings growth was going to be 91%. You also see the PE was 189, which would have scared away a lot of people. In fact, we all remember how many people were dissing the Internet Group in 1998, even in 97, and certainly in early 99 before they topped. I was buying these stocks. I wasn't afraid of buying these at all. We have the... Oh, Dan, just go back one. Yeah, we have the high. I'm just pointing out the rising relative strength line before the breakout. You ideally want to see the volume in the handle dry up, That indicates after this big advance, the stock went from 11 to 19. That indicates that when it came back down here on lower volume, that there was very little profit taking. If the volume dries up in a pullback, that's bullish for the overall look of the stock. If the volume was to really soar when the stock pulls back in the handle, I would be very concerned and might not even buy the stock if it broke out of the handle after that. As you can see down here, we've got the high volume confirming the breakout. Dan. And this shows you where the stock went while everybody else was saying how ridiculously overvalued it was. Okay, this is another stock, Rare Medium. Again, has the exact same big saucer pattern, has the handle. It's kind of hard to see because the light's on it, but down here you'll notice that volume did dry up pretty dramatically in the handle, which is exactly what you want to see. Notice, I didn't put any earnings up here because there were none for the company. This was a situation where there were no earnings, but the revenue growth from one quarter to the next was phenomenal. I mean, this is like 100% from one quarter to the next, and then 117% the next quarter. So we have the rising relative strength line, and the stock broke out, looks like, on pretty good volume, confirming the fact that a lot of people with money were out there interested in owning that stock. And here's what happened in the several weeks after that breakout. Okay, this is a company, Ask Jeeves. This is one that I bought myself right at this, as it came out of this saucer and handle formation. The buy point, again, was not necessarily above the top of the base, but when you have a situation where you've got a saucer with a handle, you want the buy point to be right directly above the top of the handle. So the handle comes down. Again, we're looking at the volume, and it does dry up nicely on the pullback, indicating very few people are taking profits after this big run-up. It started. Well, one reason why I was attracted to this stock is that the market was very iffy at that time, and this stock was completely standing out like a sore thumb. It was like screaming, you know, give me attention, people. And so I was attracted to this. I think I bought it right around 70 when it broke out. Came up on the big volume day, and then notice how it pulled back again, and look at the volume. The volume dried up again. That indicated that none of the people that got in down here really were interested in getting out of their position and locking in quick profits. So that was very nice. Now, when the stock broke out of this little six-day sideways consolidation, I actually added to my position. It did so on some volume. I felt good about the stock, so I added another half position to my original position. And the stock moved up to here and dropped. When it dropped down to about 102, I sold my whole position. I didn't, at that point, of course, I didn't know it was going to do this. But that's what happens. Selling to nail down a profit is by far your toughest decision. It's much tougher than the buy decision. It's much tougher than the sell to cut a loss at 5 to 7% decision. Here's another one, eSpeed. You can see it was an IPO just 6-7 weeks right before it broke out of this base. Here's another cup. Here's a little pivot, the platform or handle. And you can see the breakout again is occurring on big volume compared to other days. And you can also see in this handle area, volume does dry up dramatically. Again, that's very bullish. Here's a company, Red Hat. Some of you might remember this. Did not earn any money up to this point, but I was attracted to the stock because it had a great pattern and because it had this big sequential revenue growth. So you have the same pattern. It's got the cup, it's got the small handle, and the breakout again is on big volume. And look at how the volume again, once again, it dries up in that handle, telling you profit taking is pretty minimal up to that point. The breakout comes on volume, and you've also got, this is a decent rising relative strength line. It's only really been rising for 4 weeks, but I think I mentioned that I will bend my rules pretty regularly if the conditions warrant. Another one, Research in Motion, same kind of pattern. This company had big earnings growth expected, the rising relative strength line of only a few weeks, and here's the breakout. I liked this pattern, even though the relative strength wasn't particularly strong on this. I liked it because a lot of other stocks were going through a correction at that point in time. This is another stock that was kind of like announcing to the world in its own little way that it was ready to move higher. Again, the buy point would be just 1/8 or 1/4 point above this little handle area. The next type of base I'm going to go over here is what some people call a flat base or a straight base. In general, you want to see these things form over at least 5 to 6 weeks. The longer, the better. Pretty much, you're just looking for a sideways consolidation pattern. It generally occurs after a big up move or a substantial up move of at least, you know, 20, 30, 40%. Stock has a big move, and then it just needs to digest that move before it attempts another move, and so it moves back and forth in a sideways range like this. Generally, I like to see this type of a base hold within, say, 20% peak to trough. So, for example, this area from the top of the base to the bottom, I don't really want to see at like 40%. That's too sloppy for me. The tighter, the better. As you can see, we have a very nice upward sloping relative strength line. And you can see while it's forming the base, the volume is not really picking up dramatically, showing you that the profit taking up to that point is pretty minimal. You can see the breakout here above the base came on pretty big volume. This particular situation, the stock broke out, the market wasn't right then, and so it failed and came back a little bit below the top of the base. If you're using a 5 to 7% stop loss level, you probably would have stayed in the stock. But this is exactly what's been happening all this year. Stocks set up with bases, they break out, and they fail. In a normal market, in a good uptrending market, these patterns are going to work much more often than not. It's just when you've got an overall general market that's been weak like we've been in, which we're still in despite yesterday's up day, you're not going to see many of these things really follow through with big gains. Okay, and you can see what happened to the stock after the breakout point. Just went on higher. Dan? Okay, Oracle. This is a great example of what I just spoke about. Okay, it formed this flat base, had nice upward sloping RS line. Notice the PE was already 1.5 times the S&P, so some people were afraid to buy it for that reason alone. Notice what it did. It broke out of the sideways base, but it didn't really follow through like the other charts. It ended up building a second sideways base pretty much on top of the first one. When you see this happen in a generally weak market like the type we're in right now, this is a great indication that this stock's going to be a future big winner. You can see the relative strength line right like this. And if you recall, late last year, this was a pretty weak market, September and October. We really didn't get going until October 28th or so on the NASDAQ. So this situation where you see a base break out and form another base right on top of it in a weak market only is a great indicator that this is going to be a future big winner. So if you bought here, notice that the stock came back down to the top of the base. Perhaps you stayed in the stock because the prior base served as support, and then you see the breakout again. Maybe you added to your position right here. Big volume accompanied both breakouts, this day and this day both. Okay. This is what happened to the stock right after the breakout. Dan? Okay. Same sort of flat base pattern with MRV Communications. Had huge earnings growth expected of 400%. It had an upward sloping relative strength line that's kind of hard to see because we're not looking at the chart over here. I purposely highlighted these pullbacks. Every single pullback, if you notice down here in the volume, notice how volume dries up. If there's one thing I would like to leave all of you with today is the importance of volume in classic chart analysis. It is extremely valuable knowing where the demand and the supply can come into a stock's supply-demand type quotient or interaction. Dan? Here's another flat base. I don't recommend this until you become more advanced with this type of strategy, if this is the strategy that you choose to try to follow. But I always like to, in situations like this, if I feel very good about the stock, I might cheat, and instead of buying the stock up here at the top of this base where the arrow is pointing, I might try to cheat and buy right above a little high, like a short-term high area within this overall flat base structure, just to get a little bit of a head start. I'll take a smaller size position. If I'm wrong, I'm not going to lose a whole lot. If I'm right, it gets me in on what I think is going to be a big winner early. And then I can always add on to the position when it formally breaks out of the top of the base here. Okay, here's VeriSign, which if you would have bought coming out of the base, you got faked out. You would have bought here, you would have gotten easily stopped out with your 5-7% stop loss level, which is what I usually use. However, it looked like a real good stock at this time. The relative strength line showed that it was outperforming the market. I would have bought the stock again here if I still had faith that the overall market was in a good uptrend at that point. And this is what happened. Now notice up here it tries to form another flat base, but it's very loose and sloppy, and certainly more than the 20% level that I just told you I like to look at from top to bottom. So this is something, even though it did break out on big volume here, I probably would have avoided. Here's Dell Computer, another flat base scenario. Dan, and you can see what happened to Dell moving all the way up here. Here's another stock back from 1990. By the way, a lot of these, you might notice a lot of these prices are pretty ridiculous for these stocks. They look pretty low, and that's just because I'm coming back and building these charts, you know, 10 years later, and I didn't adjust for any stock splits. But obviously the chart and the concept is the same. Again, flat base, big volume on the breakout. Notice how the first few days right after the breakout, look at how volume dries up again. One thing I do every time I look at a chart that I'm going to buy is I look at the price and the volume bars within that base. I want to look at the big volume bars in the base and see if they correlate with rises in price for that day. That tells me that big institutional money is accumulating that stock. And it's the big boys with the big bucks that really control the market. It's really not small investors like us. Okay, I'm going to get into selling right now. Selling, there are really two decisions on when to sell. One is if you're wrong. I always limit my loss at 5-7%. On my quote machine, if a stock drops 7% and I'm not already out, I'm alerted by the alert that I set on the machine, and I immediately get out of the position. As I said, I'm interested in cutting my losses, preserving my capital so that I can come back and play the game again. Unfortunately, I spoke to one of our members who used big size positions in his account recently, and he might have cut his losses short, but because they were big positions, they added up, and he absorbed a big dent in his account. Rule number one is when you're wrong, you admit it in this game, you walk away. Whether you're an option trader, futures trader, swing trader, day trader, or intermediate term trader, I've never met one successful trader who did not raise his hand and say, guess what, I'm wrong, I'm going to sell, I'm going to walk away, I'm going to preserve my capital. You absolutely have to do that if you're going to survive and play the game again and again. Now, Dan, go back to the first one. I'm going to show you a few different situations of when I would be inclined to sell. At some point, you're going to be involved in a stock that makes a climax run. It's going to be very exciting to you. You're going to kind of be jumping up and down while this is happening. But when that happens, you have to start to look at when you're going to get out of that thing and not expect that it's going to go to the moon. I want to leave you with two ideas here today on how to handle a climax top, because there's really no way that it's going to work correctly all the time. The first thing you always want to look for, well, first of all, when we look at this particular situation, this is Commerce One, the internet stock. You always want to look at, when you see a wide range bar like this, this is an alert signal to you that perhaps the stock is moving into a climax run-up. Everybody, when you see that and you look down here at this huge volume bar versus all the volume bars prior to that point, I mean, it is so heavy, it's telling you that everybody's found out about the stock at that point. So we see the first big volume bar, and what I always do is when a stock gets into a climactic run and it comes off 15% from the peak, I'm usually out of the stock at that point. Sometimes I'll even cut it to 12%. This rule alone has saved me a lot of money on these things, because usually these things will not pull back by much more than 15 or 20% and then go again and run up another 50% in your face. Usually that will not happen. The second thing I want to leave you with on this, the first thing again was you might consider selling when it drops 15% off its absolute intraday peak. The second thing I will leave you with is when you see a first day of distribution off the top, often that day tends to be the high for the move. When I say day of distribution, I'm referring to simply a day in which volume is higher than the prior day's volume and stock closes down for the day. It can close down by 1/8 or it can close down by 40 points. In this situation, your first distribution, you have no distribution days up here. Your first distribution day is this day. Notice the volume is higher than the day before. The stock opened right here, went all the way up, and everybody sold into that move, and it closed down at its low, very bearish for the stock. If the stock did not drop by 15%, setting off my rule number one, I certainly would think of selling at the end of that day because it was the first day of distribution. Okay, Dan. Okay, the second day. Okay, this is a situation, again, with M-Clone Systems. This was one of the big biotech runners of early this year when the whole group made a big move. So the stock, let's say you were to buy out of a breakout of this cup pattern, or perhaps you used this as a launch area to initiate a position here, and you held on and it runs up. Here's your first big wide range bar day. This is, again, an alert signal to you, not to get too excited, but to think that maybe it's time that you got to start plotting when you're going to get out of this thing. So here's your first big wide range price bar. Your first distribution day, though, doesn't occur until right here with the red bar, or the red arrow. This, again, is your first distribution day because it's the first day in which volume increased from the day before and price closed down. That's called a distribution day. Again, it caught this particular move pretty well. You would have been out at the end of this day. Here's a stock called Metarex. Something is definitely going on with the stock when you see this type of wide range bar here. Of course, this is ridiculous. Such a big move that this kind of move can't really be sustained. This is usually going to lead to some sort of climax in the next several days or week. In this case, again, you're waiting. Here's the peak. It did not come down off the peak by 15%, so you're still in the stock. And here's your first distribution day right here, which would have been a trigger to me to sell. Some traders I know that are very successful like to sell as a stock is rising higher. I've always been the kind of person, I just like to see some proof that some kind of high has been made. And to me, that is either watching a stock come down 15% off its intraday peak, or in some cases 12%, or seeing this distribution day. Okay, here's another climax top in Myriad. You know, Dan, I'm going to move to the next because I want to make sure we see all these. Here's a climax top. Whenever you see a situation in which volume is so ridiculous compared to all the days before it, you want to get suspicious, particularly when you see a gap open like this one right here. This was a stock that obviously gapped open. This is known as an exhaustion gap, which you can learn more about in any textbook on technical analysis. Notice that this down day here is not a distribution day because volume did not rise from the prior day. However, the stock did drop 15% off its high, and I would have sold it probably this day or this day, whichever was 15% off the peak. Dan? Okay, let's just go on to the next so we can to the next. Now here's Amazon. Let's go back. Yeah, here's Amazon. Again, here's your gap open, your gap open here, another gap open here. Here's your alert bar right here. The volume is so great that you have to really start to think that this thing's getting too known by the world for its own good, and it eventually might be putting in some kind of a top. In this situation, you wanted to sell right here. It was 15% off its high. You didn't see the distribution day yet, but the 15% off its high trigger was enough. Dan, go to the next one. Okay. The first thing I'm looking for to sell then is if I'm in a climax top situation like I just showed. The second situation is if you get a stock break out of a base and fail immediately after the breakout. That's a very good sign. Something's wrong with the stock, or something could be wrong with the whole market in general. This has been the story with the NASDAQ market in the year 2000. Some stocks had pretty good looking patterns, pretty good looking base patterns. They broke out on big volume. I would buy these along with everybody I know that's successful trading this strategy, and we would get stopped out every single time. You can't let this happen too much to you, because you might think, well, it's only 5 to 7% of each position, but over a period of months, if we're in a bear market like we've been in, these little 5 and 7% losses can add up in your account. So in this situation, here was your saucer or cup pattern. Notice how this handle is not even it's not a handle like you would normally see on a regular coffee cup, for example. If you went down to the store, your spouse asked you to go down to the store and buy a coffee cup, and you return with this, your spouse might kind of wonder how they were going to hang on to it. So this is very faulty. This is an alert signal right here. When you see an upwardly wedging handle like this, this is danger. And even though it breaks out on good volume, right, on this day here, look at how big the volume is, I would have avoided that stock. Usually these things break out and might look impressive for a couple days, but people sell into that move and they usually just break right down. So this is the first example of the way a stock can top on a breakout failure from a base. It tries to break out, for whatever reason, it comes down. That to me is danger. That's a sign it's topped. Okay. Here's another situation, a company called Razorfish. Here's your saucer pattern, here's your handle, it broke out. Notice how it couldn't really follow through, and as soon as it broke below this 45 line here, which was the top of your base, it just, you know, everybody looks at these same breakout points, and a lot of people obviously were selling at that point and the top was in. Okay, same thing with Microsoft. Flat base, broke out, volume was you know, decent, couldn't hold the breakout, failed, there's a major top. It's the exact same situation. Here's your saucer pattern. Here's your little handle. Here's your breakout. It came right back to your pivot point, so perhaps it didn't shake you out then. But then when it came up, you saw these days of distribution, and the stock eventually broke down. Notice every time the stock tried to rally here and here, if you notice, the volume again is telling you there's no demand for the stock at that price. You notice it shrinks on this little rally and also on this one. And if you look at the NASDAQ composite since it topped March 10th, you will see a series of wedging action on the part of the index. As every time it tried to rally up, you saw volume just dry up. And that was a great sign to me at the time that the market was not ready to run. When you see volume just dry up on rallies in a downtrend, that's really death. So this is another example of how volume, it can be extremely important in keeping you on the sidelines in an iffy market. Okay, same thing. This company, JNI Corp, broke out. Here's your big, big cup. Here's your little handle. Breakout, failed. That was a top. We'll go to the next one. The next one, yeah. Okay, I just explained what wedging is all about. That refers to a stock rising on lower volume. Common sense tells you that if volume dries up as a stock moves up, here's your volume dry up. Common sense tells you that as a stock moves up on lower and lower volume, it's losing demand for the stock. People are not interested in buying the stock as it moves higher. Usually that's a sign the stock's going to top. That's something right there that I would be very concerned with if that was a stock that I held. Yeah. Okay. Same exact thing. Look at this. The stock breaks out of a little three-week consolidation here, which, by the way, I would not have bought because I don't look at bases that are less than 5 to 6 weeks in duration, usually. Not always, but usually. Look at the stock. Runs up here, but look at volume. It's just getting lower and lower. And eventually you get in this real choppy, volatile situation, which led to a top. Again, stock rises as volume dries up. That's a top. This recently happened in SDLI. I think I might have pointed this out in my Martyr in the Market column on TradingMarkets.com when this was going on. Corning, notice there were only a few days of drying up volume, but the stock tried to retest its high at point A here. There was no demand for the stock up here. How do I know that? Because I looked at volume and it was drying up for several days in a row, and with no demand, when a stock's near its old high, a lot of times it's going to just roll over and kind of die for a while. Okay, same thing happened with Dell. This looks like it's back in 1995. Stock came up out of a little, this certainly was not a constructive cup pattern. It's just, it's too sharp and it's too much of a V. V patterns that come out are very unproductive from the standpoint of an intermediate term trader. They generally don't have, they didn't shake out enough doubting Thomases down here, which is what you need to have when a stock moves up. You have to have a lot of people that are, real worried about the stock. But this was just too quick. It just went down and went right back up. But anyways, you can see it makes a new high here, comes back, and then tries to come up here and make another new high. And the volume wasn't there, telling you that the demand wasn't there. And sure enough, the stock rolled over after that. Yeah. And the same thing, another situation with Dell doing the exact same thing, lower volume. Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit about the general market, how I look at the general market. Bill O'Neill came up with a very valuable concept that he calls the follow-through-day concept, which I am not going to talk about today. If you're interested in knowing more about that, I suggest you read his book, How to Make Money in Stocks, and also go to his website, investors.com. What I like to do, though, I use Bill O'Neill's follow-through-day technique. I also like to count the number of days in which price rises when volume's higher than the prior day versus the days when price falls versus when volume is rising from the prior day. So I'm basically looking down here. I've outlined every single day in which volume rose from the day before. And when price rises on that day, I put a green arrow up here and down here. And when price falls on that day, I put a red arrow. This, to me, is probably the best indication of what big institutional money is doing. It's not scientific. It's very subjective. But I have found that just by looking at this indicator alone, I am usually on the right side of the market when I try to look at a general market index like this. So in this situation, you can see the Dow tops here, a lot more red arrows indicating these are distribution days on the way down, very few green arrows. And then down here, you notice the situation changes, and you all of a sudden start seeing your red arrows or your distribution days sort of evaporate and being replaced by more accumulation days, which are the green arrow days, when price rises on a rise in volume from the prior day. So what I do is I want to see an index make a higher high and a higher low before I start to get too excited about the fact that, gee, maybe this is a bottom and we might be headed higher here. That's step number one. Step number two, I'm doing what I just explained here. I'm looking at the number of accumulation days versus distribution days. And when the balance of power starts to switch over to accumulation days, and you start to see an index putting in a higher high and a higher low, for example, right here is your bottom. Here's a high, here's a low, here's a higher low, here's a higher high. An uptrend is simply higher highs and higher lows. very basic. A downtrend is lower highs and lower lows. We'll go to the next one, Dan. Okay. This was one of the most powerful intermediate term bottoms that I've seen. Here's the prior top was right here. I think we were off maybe 11% from here to here or something like that. You can see on the way down, there's a bunch of distribution days, only the one accumulation day here. When you come down to the bottom, notice how everything changes. Look at all these green arrows. In a 3 to 4 week period of time, you're seeing something like 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 accumulation days and one distribution day. At the exact same time this was going on, there were scores of growth stocks breaking out of the types of bases I just showed you. This was a real green light to me to go in there and start buying. It was time to go ahead and start buying growth stocks as they were breaking out of bases. This is the crux of how I look at the general market. I ignore what the press says. I turn my TV off at 10 a.m. Eastern and it stays off for the rest of the day. You know, I don't read Wall Street Journal. I really try to look at just what the market is doing itself. And I also don't look at any indicators. The only indicator I look at really besides volume is the relative strength line, which I always look at on every stock chart. But when I look at the general market, I just look at the big averages, mainly nowadays the NASDAQ, not so much the Dow. And I look at, as I just said, the accumulation distribution patterns in the index. Is it making higher highs, higher lows, or lower highs, lower lows? So in other words, I see what sort of trend it's in. And the second thing I look at is the action of the leading stocks. The index can look great, but if none of these leaders are coming out of well-formed bases, that tells me there's really nothing to buy. And the speculative sentiment that is drawn to these high-growth vehicles that I like to favor in the technology sector is not there. And every durable advance needs some kind of speculative sentiment. I don't mean speculative sentiment like December 98 when companies put out press releases saying they were going to have an internet site up in 10 days and the stock goes up 80% that day. I don't mean that kind of froth. I'm talking about just healthy sentiment, healthy speculation where people are once again feeling they want to plunk money down on stocks with high growth rates, which are your higher risk vehicles in the market, no doubt about it. Dan, go back to the last one. Yeah, this right here, if you notice, this is just a straight up move. This is so powerful. There really are no natural highs and lows in this. So in this situation, that's the most bullish thing of all. When it comes right off and you're seeing a bunch of accumulation days over, say, a 3 week period, and at the same time you're seeing growth stock after growth stock breakout. That was a great time to be in the market. Dan. Okay. Here's your bottom, the big bottom in September 98. This was really tricky because a lot of people said, here's the bottom here, started buying coming up here. The market ended up testing this prior low, which shook a lot of people out. But at this point, when it makes a higher high right here on this particular day, it exceeded this high here, that should have told you that definitively the trend changed. And you should not have been waiting for the market to be way up here to begin buying again. At the same time, a lot of growth stocks were beginning to break out of bases right in here. So again, you're putting the two things together. You're putting in your analysis of the big averages, namely the NASDAQ these days, with what the leaders are doing. If you see a lot of growth stocks begin to break out of big bases on big volume, at the same time that a big average like this is coming off some sort of low, you don't know if it's the real low at that point. You never really know that except in hindsight. But if you see an index coming off a low with all of a sudden a bunch of accumulation days versus the distribution days, and you see a bunch of growth stocks break out of bases, that's all you need to know to go back in the market. But this is the way I do it anyway. Dan? Okay, this was the NASDAQ bottom of late 99. This is sort of a long basing period. Right in here, you can see this particular day when it tried to break out to a new high was pretty critical. Usually where the rubber meets the road in any stock is when it makes a new price high on a particular day where it hasn't made a new price high, say, in 5-6 weeks at least, or even 6 months at times. That's where the rubber meets the road. If that stock's going to move higher,
that particular breakout day and its volume on that day are two things that are going to tell you if the stock is really healthy or not. So the market comes back. So the market on this particular day, if you notice, had very weak volume. That was a sort of a warning sign that, gee, something's maybe not right. The market comes back down here. These 2 days were key. These were critical days for you to recognize. You have to be looking at this every day. You have to know what the big averages are doing on a price volume basis every single day. If you saw this price gap here and this price gap here, and you notice the two big volume days here that exceeded volume every single day way back for months, and both days closed near the high of their daily range, that's enough to tell you that the tide has changed. When you combine that with the fact that a lot of growth stocks were breaking out of bases, a lot of these high growth tech glamours like Brocade, Ariba, JDSU, Juniper Networks, PMC Sierra, VeriSign, was VeriSign doing that then too, Dan? Yeah, Siebel Systems. When you see these two things happen, the index take off like this and the leading stocks, it's your best indication the market is ready for a move higher and the bottom's put in. I don't try to predict how far the market's going to go. I don't try to predict the market at all. I just look at what the market's doing right now. In Bill O'Neill's book, How to Make Money in Stocks, he says something like, it is not necessary to forecast the market. All you need to do is know what the market's doing right now. Those were the most valuable words I've ever read in any textbook, and I've read over 100 of them on the market. Those are the most valuable words that taught me the most about how to look at the general market. If you forget about trying to forecast things and look at what the market's doing today in terms of the averages and the leading stocks, that's all you need to know. I've been in every intermediate advance for a number of years, and I haven't missed one advance by just following that basic philosophy. Dan? Okay, this is another example here was our recent top in the NASDAQ. This was an example of how if you were looking at volume when the NASDAQ came down and you saw these wedging days where you had price rise, volume dry up. Price rise, volume dry up. Every single time for four consecutive rallies that price tried to rally, there was no demand for stocks at that point. You didn't have to have somebody get on CNBC and tell you that maybe it was going to go up, but then again, maybe it wasn't. If you just looked at this is objective evidence of what was happening today and was more than enough information to tell you to not be in the market at that point. Or if you wanted to go in the market, maybe make a couple of test buys and see if they worked out. And if they didn't, you cut your losses and you went back into 100% cash position. For those of you that are not familiar with my strategy, when the market is not in a healthy uptrend in the NASDAQ and a lot of the leading stocks are breaking down, I sell my positions and I move to 100% cash position. I did that on March 15th. That was two trading days after the top. I'm not going to be that perfect every single time. And for all I knew at that point, as I wrote in my column, I said, I don't know this is going to be a top, but when things are breaking down and your winners are starting to really come in, at some point you have to draw a line and say, I'm going to lock in profits, move to cash. And if it turns around and goes right back up in my face, so be it. Dan? I wanted to just show you a little bit of, this is sort of an interesting chart. This is how Microsoft looked right after it went public. And we all know Microsoft was one of the biggest winners of the last 12 or 15 years or so. Some people ask me if I ever play the IPO market. My answer is, I play it, but I don't play it on the IPO day. I don't play it on the day that it goes public. The reason is that there's not enough price history there for me to understand supply and demand, the supply and demand quotient in that particular issue. By waiting for a stock to go public, here's where it went public. And again, you can see I didn't adjust for price splits because it's trading at, 24 cents here. It came out, formed a little pattern here, and then formed sort of a bigger semi-saucer or cup-type base, okay? Notice when it came up to the top of this, it pulled back for a couple of days, forming a little handle or a little platform. And it's kind of hard to see, but if you look at this little line down here, you'll notice that you had 2 days of really, really low volume. Nobody was selling. when the stock came back. That was an alert signal that told me if I was interested in this stock, this one had the potential for some sort of a move. This is the way I play the IPO market. I wait for a base to form, and after the base forms, I'll go ahead and buy the stock when it breaks out to a new high. The next one down is Microsoft again. This shows you what I just showed you before. Here's the base, here was the volume, and you can see what it did from here. Notice how it moved up, it formed another base right here, which would have made an ideal place for you to perhaps add on a little bit more to your initial position, which is called pyramiding. Yeah. Okay, fine. This is Cisco Systems when it went public on this day right here. I guess everybody in here probably wished they would have bought somewhere in this point and probably wouldn't be sitting in this room today. But I actually saw this happen over here. This was 1990, and I was just learning the strategy, and I was scared to buy stocks that I wasn't familiar with. And this was in the networking industry, and in 1990, the only networker that I knew about was Novell. I didn't really understand what networking was all about. I thought, Cisco, I've never heard of them. I'm going to go to the next one. I'm not going to consider buying this stock. What happened was, here's your bear market. There was a July to October bear market in the big averages. What you should always be aware of in a down market, even like the one we're in now, is that when the bear market ends, it's the stocks that move back to new high ground the first that invariably are your big winners in the coming months and sometimes even years. This is the best example I've ever seen of a stock that really came so quickly off its low. In 9 days, it was up at its old high, okay? It took months for the NASDAQ and Dow to regain their old high. So something about that stock was telling you to buy it. It was, for some reason, it was like somebody was, you know, pushing down on it for a long time, and it was like a spring, and as soon as the pressure of the overall market came off, the stock was ready to just jump into new high ground. This is another sort of a cup pattern with the handle. It's not a particularly perfect handle because it's very deep from here to here. You can see what happens on the breakout day. You've got huge, huge volume that dwarfs every other day in its history. This is the biggest sign that perhaps something is really happening with the stock. Again, volume tells you a lot about a stock or an index. Yeah? The one thing that I do, which a lot of the successful people that use this kind of strategy do, is related to money management. And that is, when we get a winner, we add on to the winner as it goes up. Now, I really would not recommend anybody do this that has not had any experience with the strategy. I would prefer to see people maybe paper trade this kind of a thing. When I first started studying the strategy in 1990, I paper traded it for probably 4 months. Then we went into the bear market, and miraculously, all my paper trades sort of stopped themselves out, and I was in cash on my paper portfolio, and that's what gave me the confidence to begin trading this in 1991 with my real account. The worst thing you can do is take any new strategy that you've never traded before and start trading your real money, because what's going to happen, I mean, if you haven't really gotten a lot of confidence with it, is what's going to happen is you're going to get into a losing spell, which we all have, where you put on 5 or 6 trades in a row and they all are losers, and you're going to be tempted to chuck the whole strategy before you even give it an opportunity. I'm sure this last year, a lot of people bought breakouts and their account, I see a couple heads nodding here, they saw their accounts go down for whatever reason. The position sizes were too large, and they chucked the whole strategy, and I find that very sad, because this type of strategy has produced, I'm not saying my particular type, but a similar strategy has produced more outstanding intermediate term traders of our era than any other hands down. My two good friends, Gil Morales and Christian Katcher, each ran their accounts up over 500% last year. Chris Katcher has run his account up in the last 4.5 years 70,000%. I personally looked at his account statement 2 months ago, spent 5.5 hours with it, looking at all the trades. I can certainly verify it. I just finished co-authoring a book called Conversations with Top Traders that's available for sale at one of these booths out here at the show. A number of the people in that book used this sort of high growth, high relative strength, momentum-based strategy. There's a great interview in there, chapter one, in fact, with Chris Catcher and Gil Morales, and they go in and they talk about how they roll up big gains year after year using this type of strategy. You don't learn it overnight. It took me maybe 2 or 3 years to feel totally comfortable with this. I had a great first year in 1991 with the strategy. In 92, I ignored the sell discipline, and as all of my stocks topped and formed perfect tops, I was sitting there holding them, thinking, well, I'm going to be a long-term investor now. I'm not going to do what I did in 1991. And all my winners, you know, Home Depot and Costco Wholesale and some of these big names broke down. And in 92, I think I underperformed the S&P by like 10 percentage points. So it wasn't, you know, it didn't really kill me, but it was still very frustrating. In 93, I learned my lesson in the spring of 93, and I went back to the strategy I've been talking about, and I really haven't looked back since. One more thing about money management, again, is it's a very personal thing, how much of your account you allocate to each position. I'll usually put on somewhere around 10% of my account on my opening position, but if you're just starting out on the strategy, I would suggest something smaller until you really prove to yourself that it works. Perhaps paper trade it. That might be one way to get going with it. A second thing to do might be to take a small portion of your account and devote it to the strategy. If that works, if you have confidence with that, maybe devote your whole account to the strategy. But you have to get to a point where you have absolute 100% faith in any strategy you're using before you commit your whole account to it. Because again, as I said, the danger is you will be in a situation where you come up with 5, 6 losers in a row and you're going to check the whole thing. You're not going to have faith in it, and that's the exact worst thing to do. And sadly, probably a lot of people have done this with various strategies that they have this last year. When it wasn't the strategy that didn't work, it was the person's discipline to not buy stocks and go heavily in an invested position when the overall market looked cruddy. But getting back to money management again, what the best people do, once you get some experience with this, the number one best way to jumpstart your results and really add a tiger in your tank is to take more concentrated positions. And what that means is you add to a position as it moves up. If you look at your account at the end of every year, you'll probably notice as you do your Schedule D, or perhaps you just look at your account anyway, you'll notice that almost every year you'll have a few pretty big winners in your account. No matter what strategy, even if you're a buy and hold investor, you'll have a few big winners and there'll be a bunch of stocks that went underwater, stayed there for the whole year or whatever. The idea with money management, the way I use it here with my strategy, is when I'm in a stock that breaks out of a base and the volume's good and everything, if it runs up no more than 5%, I'm going to add to that position at the 5% point or at the 2 to 3% point. So let's say, hypothetically, let's just say I have a $100,000 account and I put 10% of that account in a stock at a price of $100 a share, okay? If it's got a great looking base and the overall market is in a new uptrend, for example, stock breaks out at 100, moves up to 102 to 103, but no more than 105, and I'll add another half-size position. So I'll add another 5% of my account to that position. If it moves up a little bit more, I may add half of that, which would be 2.5%. That's called pyramiding, where you've got your biggest size position down at the bottom, and as it moves up, you're putting smaller and smaller pieces onto that original position. You don't want to add necessarily the same size position as you move up because you're going to get your average cost too high. Then what I do is I trade each of those individual positions as if they're their own position. So if I buy 10% of my account, I put in at 100, and I put another 5% at 102, and another 2.5% in at 105. Each of those I use a 5 to 7% stop loss rule on. Basically, or actually a lot of times I use a 3% stop loss rule on these add-on positions because I've got a larger part of my account in those positions. when the market's really running strong, and I feel very confident that this is the beginning of a new intermediate term move, I will sometimes take a position of 20% of my account to start off within a stock. I did that in 98, I think it was February or March, when the internet group was moving, and nobody believed in the group then, and everybody thought they were way hyped and overvalued. But by looking at these charts and ignoring whatever you saw on financial television or in the newspapers, you saw big money was lining up in droves to buy these things. And so what I did was I took a 20% position, I think, in Amazon and another one in Yahoo. And as they moved up, I added on to each stock. And at one point, it was, I think, late February, early March, or mid-March, I had 50% of my account in Amazon, 50% in Yahoo, and I had five other stocks with the remaining 100% of my account. In other words, I was using full margin, which is it's called 195% long. When you're 100% invested in the market, that's 100% long. When you borrow money and go on margin, which I only recommend that people do when you're really comfortable with the strategy. I'm just illustrating to you how people that have done this successfully for a number of years jumpstart the results to a new level when you start to use margin and you add on positions. So at that point, I had 100% of my account in two stocks, Amazon and Yahoo, and five stocks for the rest of the other 95% I was invested, and everything worked out beautifully. And that little move that I made greatly contributed to my results in 1998. So you absolutely want to force more of your money over time into the better stocks in your account. But you don't want to necessarily just add on to positions as a stock is extended above its base by, say, more than 5-8% or so. One thing I didn't mention, which is I can't believe I didn't bring this up, but you never want to buy a stock with this strategy anyway. You never want to buy a stock when it's, say, more than 5-7% above the top of the base. Say you take a day a vacation yesterday. The stock breaks out. Its pivot is 100. That's the buy point, the top of your base. It moves up, say, 10%. And you're gone that day. You didn't buy it. You come back Monday, you see it's at 110, you immediately buy it because you're afraid you missed the move. That's the wrong move to make. The reason is that when you're buying a stock more than 10% above the base, and you're wrong, there's nothing to support that stock. That's the whole reason why you buy a stock coming out of a base. The reason being, if you're wrong, there's some sort of support in the form of the top of the base so that the stock perhaps doesn't drop much more than a few percent, and you're still in the position with maybe a small loss, or maybe you're break even at that point. So again, I would not recommend margin or concentrated positions or even adding your winners until you prove yourself that this strategy works. There's some people in this room that started trading this strategy in the last 6 to 9 months that have yet to really make it work for themselves based on the general market and how bad it's been. Hopefully these people will find some better fortune next year. It's nobody has really made money in this market much unless you took advantage of the February to mid-March blow off in tech stocks, which was a great opportunity for a lot of people. Unless you took advantage of that, you didn't really make much money using this strategy this year, and you might have even lost a little if you kept buying every time stocks broke out without really showing a lot of regard to the fact that the NASDAQ really was pretty much in a downtrend for most of the year. Okay, I'm happy to talk with anybody that has questions from this point on. Yeah. Oh, okay. Great. Thanks very much for listening.